Hello, friends. Patrick McFarlane here of the Liberty Bigly podcast, coming at you with another episode. First off, I just want to apologize for not releasing episodes since before Christmas. It's been a freaking whirlwind, and I suppose it's been, man, maybe even a month already. So I'm going to be catching up on a lot of stuff this episode. And hopefully I'll be putting out an episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast and getting some Patreon bonus content out there for all of my faithful Patreon supporters. I really do appreciate it. I'm sure that I would hope that all of you listen to this show. I would think that you would, but whatever. I guess don't feel bad if you don't. It's like, but if you're supporting because you like the extra content, I would hope that this is also extra content for you. But yeah, so a lot has happened. Before Christmas, the week before Christmas, I had my first appellate brief that was due, and so that got taken care of. But that was a sprint to the finish in the last few days, and then so it was like the appellate brief was getting done the week before Christmas, and then I had to make sure that on Monday, the Monday before Christmas, we had been working on it all the previous week. But then on Monday was the day that we flew out to visit my wife's parents in Utah and be there until from Tuesday, Christmas Eve, until January, the new year, January 1st. We were in Utah. But that Monday morning, we flew out that day, and I had to go into work that morning and make sure that the brief was submitted because the appeals court has all of these special guidelines and rules that you have to follow. And you have to have a specific number of copies of your brief, paper copies that are filed. They have to be professionally bound with a spine binding, and they have to have a blue cover, and the text has to be, font with the margins, I think 3 and 4 inches on both sides, and the text cannot have more than 70 characters per line. And there has to be certifications where you verbatim list a bunch of passages and certifications that you attest to. And it's this whole rigmarole process before you even get to the substance of the brief. And that's for the, I'm sure all the appeals courts around the states have the same deal to them. So making sure that that's done and that's filed properly and calculating your own deadlines can be pretty damn stressful. And that was my first time doing it because I was in charge of the appeal, but it was my first time doing it. And so the first time that you do anything, and this is what is so difficult about being a very young lawyer is that the first time you do anything in the legal field, it takes you about 3 or 4 times as long. And so being a new lawyer can be frustrating because even if you have other attorneys who are counseling you who know what they're doing, and have done it for a long time, even if you have that counsel, it can still take a buttload of time. Because you're just, it's your first time doing it. So that happened. And then we did Christmas over the weekend before, so in between the brief being due, working on it all the previous week. I think that Saturday or Sunday night we did family Christmas with my family, here in Wisconsin. And then left was in Utah, staying at my in-laws' house. And there's a huge family, and some of the family, they're not even, they're still living at home. They're minors. And so there was babies and other, in-laws, like my brother and sisters-in-law that have their own family. They were there with kids, and they're literally, I wanted to maybe publish some things for the show. Literally not really a moment of quiet or of peace. And if there was, it was okay, we're sleeping now. And we had our son with, and so he was disrupted from his sleeping schedule. And so we were up in the night. And It was good. I mean, it was, a good holiday season, but it was also really busy. So since then, on vacation until I didn't, we had New Year's Eve and New Year's Day off of work. And so I went back on, I think, January 3rd. And so ever since then, it's been hitting the ground running. And then the weekend after, this past weekend was spent getting things kind of back to a semblance of normal. And I ended up, so I like, yeah, getting everything with the house situated back normal this past weekend. And then getting everything caught up at work. And that is another task in of itself because while you're gone, things are not just sitting there. They're lining up. All the cases are still progressing and people still are have their injuries and their all their cases that it, I mean, it's their life. It's one of the most important things happening in their life is their personal injury case. So on top of all that, my truck has been kind of acting up, and it's been very clear to me that my truck is not safe to drive anymore. It's not as safe as I would like it to be, let's say. And so I was new slash used car shopping for the last week, and I bought my first car yesterday, the first car I've ever bought. So I really like it. It's a 2016 RAV4, and it's just a head and shoulders above my other vehicle, which served its purpose, but it was a 2004 Ford Ranger, kind of a small size truck. So there's plenty of things to talk about in here, and now I'm thinking of all the things that maybe I wanted to discuss, but as is the case, this podcast is not always about libertarianism. However, I think there will be some interspersed libertarian topics in this episode. But so yeah, my 2004 Ford Ranger, it's just getting rusted out as cars tend to do here in Wisconsin. So I'm gonna try and sell it on Craigslist or what have you. See if I could get some interest in that other than trying to. The dealer wouldn't take it on a trade-in. He said I could get more money if I just sold it anyways. So, really love my RAV4 so far. It's awesome. It kind of is making me excited to get up and go to work in the morning because I get to drive it. But so, yeah, I mean, that's so. In the meantime, over break, a few topics I wanted to hit up. I'll just say them all now so you know, and so I try not to forget. I saw Star Wars, the new Star Wars movie, so that's a topic to talk about. The Witcher series we've been watching on Netflix. These are all the pop culture things happening lately. It just so happens that I played all the Witcher video games, and most recently, The Witcher 3. But my wife has never been into The Witcher, but of course she watched the Netflix special and we really, really enjoyed that, even though it's not without things that I would like to pick apart on it. So I wanted to talk about Star Wars. I wanted to talk about The Witcher 3. I wanted to talk about local things happening with Liberty and actual boots on the ground activism that I'm participating in. Which is also exciting, and something else I'm sure that I'm leaving out that maybe we'll get into as well. Maybe I'll remember as I'm talking about it. So, oh, and going back to The Witcher, I've been reading the books too, so I thought I might make a comment on that. But going back to Star Wars, I really, upon first viewing, I thought that the Star Wars film was all right. It was even good, I would say, even though that there were moments upon first viewing when I in the theater when I turned to my wife and I was like, dumb or what or this is whatever. But as a film itself, and I got more into the reviews and I was very curious of what the Star Wars fandom reaction is, because I don't really like Star Wars. Even the original trilogy, I'm not really into. I'm more of like Lord of the Rings, Star Trek and Stargate kind of guy. I never really, I don't know, I think that a lot of the mystique around the original Star Wars derives from the fact that it was the first of its kind, really, and no one had really seen that anymore. In terms of the story itself, I don't think it's necessarily, and I might be, some people might be nodding their head along with me when I say these things, or some people might have daggers for me. But I think as far as fantasy, or excuse me, science fiction goes, or from an actual plot storyline, there's nothing incredibly super fantastic about Star Wars. I think it just has all this hype behind it, and the fact that it was the original, one of the first of its kind, like this space odyssey with visual effects that George Lucas really brought into the world. So it's definitely a seminal film series, but I think, like I said, a lot of the hype behind it is really because it was the first of its kind and blew people away, and it was really a happening in terms of film history. And so, like, credit to that for what it is, but on a personal taste level, I'm just, and maybe it's because I wasn't into it as a child very much. I think that's a big part of it. Or even in my adolescence and being a teenager, I knew that people around me really liked it, but I never got into the video games or into the film series or anything like that. But so what I thought was that upon initial viewing, it seems like the Star Wars film, if you are a casual fan, or maybe even not a fan, or just a movie-going person, you might have watched it and you probably thought, oh yeah, that was all right, And but if you are someone who cares about canon, or someone who cares about the fandom of something, or wanting something to be interesting or good or live up to the hype, upon further inspection, I watch the reviews, and I'm someone who's suggestible, so I'll change my opinion on something based off of reviews, or maybe I'll start to form an opinion about something based off of reviews. Oh, Joker is another thing I wanted to talk about, by the way, in this episode. So this might be a long episode, but I need to get to bed like in the next 45 minutes, so it won't be longer than that. But so, yeah, I'm someone who is suggestible to the point where maybe I'll start to form an opinion about something based off of the reviews that I've seen prior, and maybe since too, because that's kind of what happened with Star Wars, is that I was curious as to what the fandom thought, and I was watching the whole thing, and spoiler alert, there will be spoilers, and I don't know, maybe if you haven't seen it, maybe you don't care. I think that if you care about Star Wars at all, you probably would have seen the new movie by now. So, spoiler alert, there were a lot of things in the film that really didn't make sense, even upon initial viewing, but upon further thought and hearing from other people, I don't know, it sucked. I think upon thought, there were some good things about it. Like, I think the fight scenes were all right. There were epic scenes at the end in terms of epic space battles that were all right. But there were 50 plus plot holes in the film, and basically the rumors were all true, is that Rey identifies as a Skywalker. And she's not really a Skywalker, but after what she was through, she identifies as one. And I thought that was a super progressive kind of dog whistle in a way to this intersectionality type thing, or this transgender. You don't have, you can completely ignore your physical limitations, or completely ignore the body that you were, created as long as you identify as something You might not objectively have the talent or skill for something or the attributes to do something, but you can identify as it. Or there's always problems with Rey being a Mary Sue or someone who basically is a perfect character, and throughout the trilogy, she only becomes more perfect and doesn't have any faults. There were marketing ploys that were in the movie where you know that certain things were only there to sell merchandise. And there was another part where Rey confronts her dark side, but oh, it's just a vision. And you know that probably one of the biggest parts of that is, you know, for 4 seconds she fights her evil alter ego, but it was just a vision. And so that's just clips for the trailer. And let's see, there were other things that, big spoiler alert, at the end of the movie, Ben Solo and Rey kiss, and then Ben Solo dies and becomes one with the Force. And Ben Solo, what's his freaking name? The Kylo Ren, he has a change of heart and turns back into a good guy, but it doesn't make any sense as to his changing back into a good guy because literally Leia like dies and becomes one with the Force and uses her last bit of Force energy to connect with Kylo Ren across the galaxy, and she putters out this, basically poos out this Force energy and reaches him across with the Force, and he immediately has a change of heart. And it just didn't make sense to me. And then he has like this memory vision with Han Solo where they kind of talk, but so I don't know. It's just kind of like magic plot device that Leia poops out a Force push, and then Kylo all of a sudden changes, has a complete 180 change of heart from previous films. And I mean, I could go on and on about all the different things that didn't make sense. Spoiler alert, they kill a whole bunch of characters, and then basically they turn around literally minutes later and are like, just kidding, we're not actually killing this person. So there's no long-term ill effects from their decisions to shock you. Like Chewbacca dies, spoiler, sorry. Chewbacca dies, and then all of a sudden he comes back 3 minutes later, and they're like, ah, just kidding, gotcha. And then there's another part where C-3PO has his memory wiped, but it's okay because 12 minutes later in the film, R2-D2 has an entire backup of C-3PO stored in his memory banks. And let's see, they killed some other characters. Now, I just haven't been watching the reviews in a few days. I got really fixated on it for a couple days, but then it's been a week or two since then. So, oh yeah, Kylo Ren dies and then comes back and then dies and then comes back again. And the Knights of Ren basically are not in the film at all. And let's see, who else died and then came back to life really quick? I mean, in the second movie of the new trilogy, Leia dies and then comes back to life again. Poe Dameron's girlfriend that you meet for like the first time in this movie basically dies and then comes back again. And there's probably more. I think there's a few more that I can't think of. Like, Luke Skywalker dies, but then he comes back again as the Force, his Force ghost. And there's just so many plot holes and convenient things that. And we really kind of got the sense in the film that J.J. Abrams, or Jar Jar Abrams, as people are calling him, that he knew that the second film had been just this steaming pile of garbage, and he was trying to go back and correct and amend those past mistakes, but in doing so, did like a Keanu Reeves in The Matrix Neo dodging of the bullets that were being shot at him. Of the plot hole bullets that were just going his way, and it really didn't end up being a few of them hit him, you know, like at the end of The Matrix, where Keanu tries to dodge the bullets on the rooftops and gets shot up in his legs. So, and it really didn't make sense, spoiler alert, that Rey was Palpatine's granddaughter, and why does Palpatine come back? And in coming back, oh, yeah, Palpatine died and then came back to life. But then it was like, why Darth Vader's sacrifice is completely in vain then? You just wanted to completely just erase everything about that. And why did this new character, Snoke, die in the second movie? You're setting this person up to be this huge villain, and then you just get rid of him in the second film. And maybe you have him come back. I don't know how you would have him come back in the third film. But yeah, basically, Darth Vader's sacrifice was for nothing, and all it did really was buy the Republic or the Resistance or what have you. I hate that term now. All it did was buy the Resistance, what, like 40, 30 or 40 years of peace? And it just doesn't make sense. Or the fact that Emperor Palpatine, ever since he was thrown off and killed by Darth Vader, he, excuse me. Oh, this is another thing about doing a podcast at night before bed. He's basically been rebuilding an entire huge fleet of Star Destroyers who now each have a planet-destroying weapon miniaturized on the battle cruiser on the bottom. So 30 years ago, what took an entire Death Star to do now can be miniaturized and put on an ordinary battle cruiser. Like it was all these things that just didn't make sense. And there was a lot of comic relief in the film that I didn't think was, I don't know. I thought it was too much, and a lot of it was cheesy and not in a way that's endearing, like campy. So, anyways, those are my thoughts on the Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. And I have heard that there's a new trilogy in the works, and it might take place during the height of the Old Republic, which would be fine. And I also heard that it might be starring Keanu Reeves, and that would be interesting. And there was another name that I heard that was thrown about, but I hope it's Keanu Reeves. Spoiler alert for me, Keanu Reeves is one of my favorite actors of all time. And I love the John Wick movies. He's freaking incredible. And I heard someone say recently they didn't like John Wick 3, but piss off, man. John Wick 3 was awesome, just like John Wick 1 and 2. And you can't take it too seriously because you. Like with Star Wars, right? I mean, if I had no expectations for what a Star Wars film should be, and I saw this movie, it was probably pretty damn good. I mean, the new Star Wars movie, that is, or any of them. If you didn't have this idea of what Star Wars should be in your mind, and all of the, also, some Star Wars fans can be kind of annoying about their whole. Their huge emotional attachment to Star Wars. Like, it's like Star Wars is such a huge nostalgic part of their childhood. And the whole thing about nostalgia is that nothing can ever live up to nostalgia in terms of expectations because your nostalgia is better than what it actually was when you were a child, objectively. That's why it's nostalgic, is that you romanticize it. So, there's no way that the new trilogy could have been as good as the fans wanted. But in terms of John Wick, it's like, okay, yeah, you know what you're going to get with John Wick. Don't expect it to be anything more than that. just sit back and enjoy the fact that you have this beautifully like filmed and crafted neo-noir flick that if it can be shot in that way, in this neo-noir, with the art and the visuals and the color, and it doesn't even have to be a great plot. I don't care. Just have John Wick doing stuff, going around shooting people and getting mad about his dogs that died and driving really cool cars in this neo-noir criminal underground. And you don't really have to have that good of a plot. You can have terribly campy crap about his horrible, his ridiculous relationship with his ex or his dead wife who left him this puppy. You can have all that stuff. I'll forgive you. Even though I think a lot of the stuff is campy, sometimes in a cringe way, but I love Keanu. You have someone as badass as John Wick, Keanu Reeves, just going around getting revenge on people, like splitting skulls. You throw in a few big names like Willem Dafoe and freaking God, I always forget. Even though I love him, the guy who played Morpheus, I always forget his name. And he did some Shakespeare too, and kind of he was man, it's too late for this. He did Shakespeare, and he was who was the Shakespeare play with the African American main character? Super progressive at the time. I'll think of it halfway through who it was. Damn it. Yeah, so love John Wick movies. Would love to see Keanu Reeves in any new Star Wars movie. I hope in some way that maybe it'll piss a whole bunch of people off, like Keanu Reeves doesn't belong in Star Wars. Who gives a crap? Keanu Reeves is like approaching freaking oh my God. Han Solo like levels, Harrison Ford levels for amount of iconic roles that he's had. Like Harrison Ford was in Blade Runner, he was Indiana Jones, he also was Han Solo. I'm sure there's another like huge major role that he was that I'm leaving out. And I think it was Ian McKellen who had that t-shirt who said, I'm Magneto and Gandalf. What have you done today, or something like that? And Harrison Ford, oh, it was like some gay marriage thing. It was that Ian McKellen, because he's gay, was like, I'm Magneto and Gandalf, get over it. And then Harrison Ford wore a t-shirt that said, I'm Han Solo, Indiana Jones, and Blade Runner, I'm over it, or something like that. Pretty funny. So, next topic of discussion, The Witcher. I'll just jump to that, and then I'll talk about Joker, and then anything else I'm leaving out that I promised I would talk about. Oh, libertarian stuff. But yeah, so Witcher, I thought the film or the TV series, or the Netflix series rather, I guess, because everything is on Netflix now. A lot of people have compared it to the Game of Thrones, and I don't know if I think that's appropriate, because yes, The Witcher does have a steep learning curve, and yes, there are, different characters that go back and forth, and maybe it's just that I played the video games and I'm reading the books, so I'll take that for what it is with a grain of salt. But I didn't think it was too horribly complicated. Where it gets complicated is where in the TV series, you're jumping from timeline to timeline, and those things. Oh, I see. I think the recording stops at 30 minutes. So if there's an awkward pause, that's why. But the multiple timelines are confusing as hell. And even through playing the video games, I don't know if it's always clear exactly what the story is, because when you play the first video game, I think they are continuous, because you play the first video game, and then you go to the second video game, and when you start a new game, it asks if you want to load a Witcher 1 save. And so I'm sure that there's a bunch of decisions that are made or could have been made that may affect the story from video game to video game. But the timeline in the books isn't always quite certain either. And at least in the prequel books, because there's two prequel books, there's The Last Wish, and he didn't write them chronologically like this, like in terms of, you know, he wrote the prequel books after he had written some of the actual series books. And this is some Polish author because the whole thing is a Polish story. And we know about Poland is that Poland doesn't have social justice very much. People are very much, from my understanding, mostly against social justice, and they don't have mass immigration like a lot of European countries. So this forced diversity. But, I'm sorry. It's late. But it's not always clear in the prequels. And the two prequel books, The Last Wish and The Sword of Destiny, I think it's called, they don't have a set timeline in them, or they don't even give out dates. And it's a series, a collection of short stories, so you do jump a lot in time. I think that the stories go chronologically. I'm not quite positive about that, but it's where you get a lot of the background information about Geralt and what Witchers are and who the characters like Yennefer and Triss and Dandelion, because Dandelion, the bard that follows the Witcher around, he it goes by a different name in the Netflix series, and I don't know why that is. Maybe he has a different name in the books too, but for some reason in the Witcher 3, The Wild Hunt video game, his name is Dandelion the Bard, but I'm just not remembering now if that's his name in the books. It's all confusing because there's three different versions that you're like going through. So the books are pretty good. They're translated from Polish. There's some awkward translations at times, or things you think could have been said better or a little differently, and it can get to be so that it's, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say it interferes with the narrative, but the way in which it's written sometimes makes things a little hard to follow. So that's all I have right now. I'm halfway through the second prequel book, so I haven't had a whole lot of time to read. And usually, actually, the time I'm using to record right now is usually the time that I'm reading before bed. So that's what I would be doing. But the TV show, so a few of the problems I had with it are a lot of things that people have said about it, is that the Nilfgaardians, their armor looks like a wrinkled black ball sack, and it's nowhere near as cool as the Nilfgaardian armor is in The Witcher, with like, I don't know if it's a big, it's yellow and black. There's a big sun on their coat of arms. It's a big sun with a black background, and it's pretty cool. I mean, they're an empire, and they kind of remind me of like the French Empire a little bit. Like they're French people, perhaps, or they're cultured or quote unquote high society elitist like French people. Like you would imagine them to be. And I'm sorry for the yawning. So they're French like you, or cultured like you imagine them to be, I would say. And the armor looks terrible in the series. I've also heard people say that Ciri, her timeline is a little boring, at least a little bit in the TV show, the first season. In the video games in The Witcher 3, The Wild Hunt, it's a little bit of like, what do they call that? MacGuffin, which is what the Star Wars plot was all about in the second movie and the third movie. Is like, for those of you who don't know, a MacGuffin plot device is where you need to find a thing to get to where you need to go, or you need to find a thing so you can go to a certain place and unlock a certain thing. In a way, it's kind of like a fetch quest where the whole quest is that you need to go to this one place, fight these monsters, and get this item. And it's a little contrived. And at the beginning of The Witcher 3, The Wild Hunt, you need to find Yennefer so that you can figure out where Ciri is, because Ciri is lost again. And this is actually a plot line in The Witcher 3 that, in terms of timeline, is far past the events of the first season of The Witcher on Netflix. But you basically need to find Yennefer so you can find Ciri, because the Wild Hunt is after her. And I'm sure this will come about in further episodes of the Netflix show The Witcher. In terms of the show itself, I thought that. Oh, I was going somewhere with that. Is that you need to find Yennefer to find Ciri, and it turns out Yennefer is the mage. I don't think this is a spoiler, but it turns out that Yennefer is a mage for the Nilfgaardian Empire. And in the video game, Ciri is a daughter of the Emperor, of the Nilfgaardian Emperor. And it's unclear in the video game, and maybe it's actually come out in The Witcher 1 and 2, the video games, as to exactly whose daughter Ciri is, because in the Netflix special, she is the Princess of Cintra. And I don't know if I've even heard of Cintra in the Witcher video games. At least I can't remember if it comes up in The Witcher 3, the video game. Yeah, it's just kind of strange, and I haven't connected the two dots yet, because the last time I played The Witcher 3 was probably in 2016 or 2017. So it's been a few years since I beat it, but if I recall correctly, it's one of the best video games I've ever played in terms of gameplay, entertainment, things to do. It was just incredible. The visuals are amazing, the graphics are incredible on my computer. You can run it at max settings, it works just fine, but it's eye-popping and just a feast for the eyes, really. So, and Gwent is really fun, the card game that you can play. So if anyone listening to this show is into gaming and wants to play the Witcher series, is watching the Netflix special but hasn't played the video games, stop what you're doing right now and go buy and play them. They're incredible. So I didn't square that difference between the Netflix show and the video games. I'm sure I'll come across it in the books, because I'm going to keep reading them. They're pretty entertaining. But I thought Yennefer was, in a lot of ways, the season of The Witcher on Netflix is Yennefer's story more than it is Geralt's story. You don't really see too much about, like, what Geralt's backstory is. You see Yennefer's origin story, but you kind of hear about Geralt's backstory. And I think, in terms of narrative, Yennefer's story is the most interesting one that happens during the series. She really goes through the biggest character arc transformation, because you see her origin. And I don't know if I want to spoil it all too much. Maybe I already have dropped some spoilers, but Yennefer was a hunchback when she, I don't think this is a spoiler, but she was a hunchback when she, before she was basically, I won't say how, but how she arrived at the Mage's Academy. And there's a bunch of process by how she makes a transformation into the Yennefer that you know in the video games, which is an incredibly stunningly beautiful woman. And I don't think she's really described that way in the books. She's actually described as of average beauty. She just wears really elaborate outfits and always smells like lilac and gooseberries, which is like a meme at this point. But it's in the books all the time, and I don't know if it's supposed to be a campy element or something like that. But I don't think, I mean, she was cast pretty well, I guess, but the actress is not the most incredibly beautiful woman you'd ever see. There's tits and ass in the series, and the video games have a lot of tits and ass and sex and stuff in it. But so I guess in that way it's kind of similar to Game of Thrones, but I don't think that the actress who plays Yennefer is as well endowed as the video games are. Maybe I'd have to reconcile that, but she's not quite as good to look at as the video game either. And I understand that when you're casting someone, maybe there's certain things that you prioritize. So maybe I'm being harsh, but she does a good job, I think, in terms of the casting. Geralt was cast super duper well. And I think the guy, he also plays Superman. I think it's Henry Cavill is his name, I think. I'm not up to gang, up to speed with all of Hollywood and actors' names and crap. But he did really well, and I believe he's a gamer, and he's played the Witcher video games and probably read the books. And he captured the voice from the video game, like, and the demeanor of Geralt and the personality of Geralt very well. And Yennefer is all right. Like, she isn't exactly the Yennefer from the video games. There's some slight differences because I think the one in the video games is quite a bit sweeter. Although she can be conniving in her own way, but very powerful and not domineering but assertive in the video games, whereas the Yennefer in the Netflix special is more conniving and selfish and self-absorbed. And maybe that is pretty well, that's more like how she is in the book. So maybe that's a good thing. But I thought she did fine. They kind of mess with the storylines a little bit because in the book, in the prequel series, Yennefer basically is having sex with Geralt and also having sex with that guy that she met at the Mage Academy. And while she's bouncing from both of them, she's also sleeping with random people. And I don't know how much I really like that. It seems like she is pretty monogamous. Maybe like she's monogamous in the TV series, or at least she cares about the fact, at least in the video game, she cares about the fact that Geralt be monogamous. And if you try to sleep with her and Triss, you get dumped by both of them. So it seems like in the TV show, she cares about the Netflix show, she cares about Geralt being monogamous. Which I like better than her being a slut in the books. To that end, Triss was horribly cast, I think. Triss is in the video games, and I haven't encountered her too much in the books, but at least in the video games, Triss is incredibly beautiful, more beautiful than Yennefer is, and just in my opinion, she's more well endowed, of course, than the actress. The actress also looks like she's either Italian or Latina. She's like brown skinned with brown curly hair, and the actress, or in and Triss in the video games is a redhead who's super pale, is pretty well endowed, and always wears super ornate outfits that are really cool looking. And I didn't see a lot of that from Triss in the Netflix series. She's also a pretty highly skilled mage. She's, I don't know, she seems kind of not that great in the Netflix special. So, I didn't think Ciri was very well cast either in the Netflix special, but we'll have to see that. But there's a lot of themes, at least in the Netflix special, that are interesting, and maybe I'll unpack them on the show from a libertarian standpoint. We're already getting to, I guess, almost an hour here. But yeah, so there's a lot of themes of pragmatism versus principle And there's an episode in the beginning of the Witcher series that maybe I'll delve into where Stregobor, the wizard, is basically going around killing every woman that is born during an eclipse. Because there, and explains this better in the book, I thought, because there are, maybe I was just looking at my phone during the Netflix series, but basically because women, babies, girl, female babies that are born during an eclipse are mutants and endowed with certain magical properties, and the humans in the Witcher universe are very adverse to magic because there was a time in the distant past where chaos and chaos magic came to the world of the Witcher. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of like the Warhammer series, if you're familiar with that. But chaos is sown throughout the lands, and it's like they call it a merging of the two worlds. I can't, the conjunction or something like that. And humans who were not endowed with this magic are understandably pissed off at all things magic. They hate it, they're afraid of it. But yet the world is around them is fraught with beasts created by magic, and it's fraught with mages and other magical things. The Wild Hunt and witchers, and witchers are, if you're not familiar and you've actually made it this far with me talking about it and know nothing about it, a witcher is what Geralt is, and there it's an order of people who became mutated when they were young, and they were basically their genes were changed, and they were imbibed with this toxin and this magical something or other that makes them resistant to poison, gives them some small magical abilities. And they go through this intense Witcher training, and it's an order of people who are basically, they kill monsters and beasts for profit. And in some way, it's super capitalistic, even though Witchers have sworn an oath not to kill for altruistic means, not to kill, not to be a sellsword, a mercenary, but they've also taken an oath not to sell their or give their services of monster killing away for free, which I guess it's a matter of preference because it's all voluntary, but I would prefer a business that undertakes some charitable efforts. And I guess through the books and video games, Geralt does do some of that too. Even if he's not in different ways, not necessarily doing pro bono monster slayings. Sometimes helping people in need or what have you, and expecting a profit afterwards, or anyways, so Stregobor, going back to that, he tries to kill all these mutants, and one of the mutants eludes him, and both independently, Stregobor and this mutant woman who was born during the eclipse, they both approach Geralt. And Geralt, by nature, is a neutral party, and that's kind of libertarian about him. He's a non-interventionist, basically. And there's a monologue about how he, if he's forced to choose the lesser of two evils, he'd rather make no choice at all. And both of these independent parties come up to him, and they want to get him to kill the other party. This mutant wants Geralt to kill Stregobor, and Stregobor wants Geralt to kill this mutant. He decides not to choose, but because he decides not to choose, the mutant basically takes a whole bunch of people hostage and forces Geralt to choose to either kill Stregobor or to have the mutant slaughter a whole bunch of people in the marketplace. And in that case, Geralt is forced into action and is forced to kill the mutant and her crew of outlaws before they kill a bunch of innocent people in the marketplace. So I thought, even though Geralt was making kind of a principled stance here, the ultimate lesson of the story is that maybe this was intentional, maybe it wasn't, but the ultimate lesson of the story is that, well, being a non-interventionist is not good or bad because bad things happen if you don't intervene. If you don't choose the lesser of two evils, that is. So there's interesting, little foibles like that are sprinkled throughout the Witcher series. And that's kind of why I enjoy it, is because it has an air a little bit of maybe the Brothers Grimm kind of, in German it's called Märchen. It's the folk tales, basically, that they have a little moral conundrum, or there's a little story to them, the moral of the story, or what have you. And it's dark fantasy, so there's, sex and tits and ass and evil, terrible, gruesome things that happen to people, and maniacal monsters that are based off of Eastern European folk tales. So I love it. It's really good, The Witcher. On another level, and there's not enough real time, I gotta go to bed, but there's not a lot of time for a deep dive on the Joker. Maybe I'll save it for another night, but I thought the Joker was a fucking masterpiece. It was incredible. Every moment of the film, and the dark nature of it, and the way that it plays, and Joaquin Phoenix's performance was incredible, and the dark twists and turns, the dark jumps in terms of unexpected lashing out and murders, and the spoiler alert. The way that Joaquin Phoenix's character murders people, and especially the first murder with the co-workers that he has, where they come to check on him in his apartment, and one of them kind of threatens him, but the reaction that the I don't want to say midget, I guess that's not politically correct, but the little person, he I guess dwarf is also really insulting. So I'll just name all the buzzwords. But the way that he reacts to the murder, I thought was very chilling and disturbing. And the whole film was disturbing and unsettling and frankly hard to watch. But thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable. I thought just, and I don't even care if it has leftist things to say. Like, one thing I appreciate about art and what I've been trying to do is that if it's a band or music or anything, life is too short not to stop and appreciate art for what it is. Even if you disagree with the message, you can, if there is a message, I think life is too short and you really miss things by not being open-minded enough to really look at art. Whether it's film, I don't like visual art, but whether. Maybe I should take my own advice on that. But whether it's film or music or a book or a play or a musical or something like that, to really take it in and observe it for what it is. And maybe you enjoy it, maybe you don't. But if you enjoy it and you think you wouldn't, don't shut yourself off to the possibility that you might enjoy it. And even if it has a message that you disagree with for political reasons or maybe reasons of taste, but especially political reasons, you can appreciate it for what it is without agreeing with the message. And I think that Joker had some left-wing messages in it, especially the fact that Arthur Fleck was cut off from government social services and became basically a mass murderer. I think that despite those messages, it was still a masterpiece, and I still thoroughly enjoyed it. Just an incredible film. Maybe I'll unpack it more in a little bit, but the film's been out for a while, so I'm kind of late to the game here. I'll close on this though. I hit up almost everything I wanted to talk about, but I was lucky enough to meet some fellow libertarians in the flesh, and it's very refreshing to get together with other libertarians. And so we're trying to start up a branch of the Libertarian Party in local politics here and try and use it as a vehicle to educate people about the messages of liberty and peace and prosperity and show how libertarians aren't just hands in their pockets, kind of selfish, greedy capitalists. And oh, so the maximum recorded, I just got a notification. The maximum recording time is an hour for this segment, so it's forcing me off a bit. But yeah, so I'm really excited about that. We're kind of drafting bylaws and seeing if we can really grow and show the rest of the state what a really good libertarian party looks like, even though all of us are anarchists, and you could pull my you could pull the purity crap on me. I guess I would refer you to an earlier episode where the purity spiraling is just not very effective. And there's always someone that's more pure than you. And I think the main effort for this, if you're going to do something, do it local. You have way more effect on politics that way, especially voting. You could talk about that too. Still don't personally believe in voting for myself, but trying to educate people, and people pay attention to political parties, and it's the one way you can talk to a certain segment. So maybe I'll discuss that a bit later in other episodes too, but I'd refer you to that earlier episode about purity spiraling, the purity psyop it is called. So, let's see. And there was one last thing I was going to talk about. Anyways, yeah, so I did see that there people have been downloading this show, which is incredible. 28 downloads on the last one, but some of the older episodes have about 50 or 60 downloads, so that's awesome. If you would, you know how to support the show, patreon.com/libertyweekly. Be sure to subscribe to this show. Please, if you get a chance, rate it, review it, share it to your friends and family, suggest it, you know, all that good stuff. And I think that's just about it. So thanks so much. I really appreciate you listening to this show. Thanks for hanging on over the holidays, and I hope to be getting back to coming up with more content. Peace.